Welcome back. I'm Michael. You are listening to The Michael Dresser Show. Rob Jolly's with us, president of Jolly's Associates, an international training consulting corporation, was a record-setting salesperson and sales trainer of New York Life and Xerox, draws on more than 30 years' experience in changing people's minds. He's the author of four previous books. He is the author of How to Change Minds, The Art of Influence Without Manipulation. Rob, hi, welcome to the show.
Great to be on the show. Thank you.
Hey, Rob, did I pronounce your last name right?
Jolly's. I think you got it.
Okay, good. And I'll make sure I got it. Let's go back to the life insurance business, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, 1962. Don't tell anybody that date. That's our secret. 1962, I went to work for Washington National Life Insurance in South Central Los Angeles on a debit, and we were collecting 50 cents, 25 cents, 75 cents a week for health insurance.
Well, you know what? I'll bet you saw a few of those kind of Glengarry, Glen Ross rooms back then.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm just a young pup. Mine was 1979, and yeah. I was a life, health, disability guy. And my mantra was 2 apps a week and 10 a month, and that was pretty much my training in total. Just don't let us catch you in the bullpen, and that was pretty much it.
Rob, in those days, my mantra was, in South Central Los Angeles, get to the house to the car as fast as you can.
Right. And I did a lot of night work as well, because I had to get the husband and wife together. But, you know, for me, and I don't know about you, New York life, in a sense, it was a tough world, but it taught me to love selling. They didn't teach me how, really. It was a lot of product training.
Sure.
Now you can change somebody's mind and sell it. But it did get me to appreciate at least the fact that here was a product that no one really felt they needed until it was too late.
Sure.
In my 2 years and change of selling for New York Life, the phone only rang twice, and the first time I was thrilled. The second time I said, well, what did the doctor tell you today?
Yeah,
why would you be looking for life insurance? And I don't mean that, disrespectfully,
sure.
Saying it's a true sale. It doesn't just fall off a tree.
Right. You know, years ago, by the way, I went from Washington National to Lincoln National Life in Beverly Hills in the Los Angeles area. It was a transition like you wouldn't believe. But that was a lot of years ago. And in the old days, the way you were taught to sell life insurance was you drove somebody down the street at, 100 miles an hour, slammed them into a tree, drove their head through the window shield, and you sold life insurance. But we have a completely different kind of customer out there today. We have an e-customer. It's a completely different world out there, and the world sales and persuasion in and of itself has taken on a new dimension, a new face, and a new look.
That's true. I don't know. I'm smiling. I'm sort of leaning back in my chair going, I don't remember the drive the guy through the windshield technique, but that was probably in the 60s.
That was the 60s.
They stopped that one. You're right. It is a different technique, and I think, I one of my heroes, I love my book, but one of my heroes is Neil Rackham, the gentleman who wrote Spin Selling, because Neil Rackham was the first guy, and I learned this as a Xerox sales rep, was the first guy to show me that we're not really looking for needs, we're not asking people about needs. It has very little to do about what somebody needs. It has to do with studying the problem. And Rackham was very interesting. There's a lot of sales guys who've written sales books. Neil Rackham is a British professor. He's a scientist. And he took a very scientific look at it. And when you start understanding that it all begins with the problem, not the need. Needs don't come from heaven. Then it changes the way you approach marketing, e-marketing, doesn't matter to me. It changes the way you approach how you present an idea.
You set the problem, follow it with the solution, and you give them some action plans so they can actually physically or mentally see what it's like to put their hands on it. And I think that's realistically what it is. Because once you set the problem, it's an emotional trigger. It's a recognizable, familiar example of what they're going through and allows them to realize that you have the empathy that understands the problem, and then you follow with the solution.
Well, well said. And I love the fact that you slipped in that word empathy, because not only do I want to see that problem, but if you want to change somebody's mind who's dug in, you're going to have to go deeper into
sure.
that problem. And that's why your word empathy is critical. Because if I paint the picture for you, If I start calling your baby ugly, that's not very empathetic. I'll do a good job of showing you the potential results of your actions, but I'm not going to change anybody's mind. And that's where the rubber meets the road.
Rob, you know what I've learned over all of these years of doing whatever I'm doing, and when it comes to marketing, selling, there's only one thing, and I don't care what the service, the product, the concept, the cause, whatever it is, there is only one thing that you're selling. When I say you in the general sense of the word, there's only one thing you're selling. You're selling an answer. That's it, period, end. And if somebody hears an answer within what it is that you're saying, then all of a sudden it starts to go. I own a brick and mortar store. I have something that you're interested in my offering. You walk in, one or two things are going to happen. You're going to buy, or I'm going to talk you out of it.
Right. Well, I'm with you on that. I would like to, you know, I keep airbrushing your comments, and I'd say, I like that. I would just like that answer to look a whole lot like the solution that I have in my hip pocket.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the difference between influence and manipulation, but we have to understand that we can have wonderful answers. We want other people to search and look for that answer. And if they do, they'll accept that answer and they'll stay with that answer for the rest of their life, as opposed to us pushing that answer front of their faces.
Well, let me give it to you a different way. When you talk, a solution is an answer to something. If you really wanted to find it at the end result, the telephone you're on right now is a solution to something. The house you live in is a solution to something. Your occupation is a solution to something. If you're married, your wife fills something up in you that you don't have without her, so she's a solution. And all of these things are an answer to something. And unless somebody hears an answer inside the offering, for the most part, we leave about 80% of the people on the table.
Yeah, well said. Yeah. I guess one of my concerns sometimes is when you study how people make decisions. And that's where I like to start in a couple of my books. It's rather than here's a tactic and here's an idea, let's prove for just a moment that people go through repeatable, predictable steps when they make a decision. A lot of times, because of the fear of change, people fight that answer. They fight that solution. Not because your solution isn't a good one, but because the pain of the present is not going to outweigh that fear of change. And that's when it gets dicey. Everybody finds religion when a problem gets big. Unfortunately, people don't fix small problems, they fix big ones. I believe as a consultant, as a person who helps people in this, change minds, I believe my job is to get at it before it becomes a big problem. That way we can lead them to the solution. They'll all get to the solution, Michael. It's just at what price? And that's what concerns me. That's why this is a personal message for me.
Sure. Now, two things drive people, and I'm sure, Rob, you're aware of this. Fear of loss, desire for gain. We make our decisions between the two. And I think what we have today is a world of people having to, you can't confront them face to face with it. It's a whole chemical reaction of survival and stopping, you said it, the fear of making the change. But if they see it outside, if they see a third party telling a story, a familiar scenario where they see somebody just like them running through the same problem and how they fixed it, they get to make the decision for themselves instead of somebody trying to push it, quote unquote, like in the old days. So,
right.
Yeah. So in essence, that there is a tremendous difference, as you say, between, persuasion and forcing somebody to do something. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You know, Michael, it's funny. I don't even think this story is in the book, but as you're speaking, it reminds me of one of the sales that got away from me. And this was back in the 80s. I, as working at Xerox, QVC came in, and they wanted me to work with their on-air personalities, and they wanted me to show them features and benefits. In other words, show us a better way to present solutions. And I watched a tool hour of some sort, and the host kept talking about the solution. People were calling in, and they said, well, who are you getting the saw? It was electric saw. Who's it for? What's it for? And I thought, I know statistically that conversation is appealing to about 6% of the population who coincidentally is looking for a saw. I wanted to move them and say, let's not talk about the saw. I want to talk. We know needs don't come from heaven. I want to hear about what that saw is replacing. How old is the saw that you have now? And talk about some of the dangers of that old saw and that old blade. And the fact is that appeals to 79% of the population. if we allow someone to articulate the problem. QVC, obviously, I didn't do a good job selling that day, and QVC has done just fine. But it's a classic example of how everyone wants to sort of drive to the solution. And I think that, you know, if the low-hanging fruit is right there for you on the solution. Those tougher questions are digging in deeper on the problem with what you said, empathy.
Okay, let me take it a step farther, because when you really deal with, you know, going after the solution may not be what that particular person is looking for, the solution that you have in your head. There's that old adage about the drill in the hole. You go to the hardware store to get you want a hole in home, you want to do a project. So you go to the hardware store to get a drill. The question is, I'm not going to ask you the question, but rhetorically, the question is, are you buying the drill or buying the hole? 90% of the population is going to tell you you're buying the drill. You are not. You're buying what the drill can do for you, and which happens to be the hole. Not the saw. What's the saw going to do for me? And the end result of what I'm looking for. And I think that's where the key is. Too many people are selling drills, and they're not selling what the drill can do. And this old stuff, and years ago, when, you know, the old needs analysis, throw it out the window. It's the wants analysis. That's the key.
Yeah, that's very good. You know, I'm scrambling. I was going to see if I could find it, but I actually found from 1942 out of an old Sears sales publication a poem called "Don't Sell Me Things," and it articulates exactly what you said, Michael. It really goes from piece to piece. Don't sell me shoes. Sell me the pleasure of walking in the fine air.
Yes.
Don't sell me toys. Sell me fine things to make my children happy. Stop selling me things.
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying, and I totally agree with you.
Yeah, because when it really comes down to it, it's what do I want? Do I go out with the real estate person to buy a house? Am I buying the house or buying what the house represents to me? I mean, that's really where the key is. It's what it represents to you. And I think the greatest example of this, and I think Nutrisystem does the greatest job in the world. You see a woman on the left-hand side of the screen, 100 pounds overweight, solemn, depressed look on her face. And the same woman on the right side of the screen, she's lost all the weight, big smile, life is good. It's in that split second of recognition is when the buying response is triggered. You see, the weight, the Nutrisystem are weight loss ads. I didn't say it's a solution to weight loss. It's the possible, it's a reaction to the possible solution for the job they couldn't apply for, they were afraid to, the relationship they couldn't have, and the list goes on and on. And many, many times you set the solution and you let them put their problem on it.
Yeah. It's interesting that more and more marketing people are coming to my programs, and I'm thinking back 10, 12 years ago, but I thought one of the greatest ads ever for when cell phones were starting to come in weren't the button and the pull and the different features. It just showed a kid sitting on a curb looking at his watch, and it was getting darker, waiting for that ride home and having no ability to communicate. There was no way to communicate with this child. And I know that's a somewhat disturbing picture, but it's an example of what really moves people.
Sure.
Once the kid's on the curb, we miss that child will have a cell phone.
Yeah,
why do we have to wait for that dysfunction to occur? And that's why I truly believe when we believe in our message, we can ask the more difficult questions to move people over what I call the fix-don't-fix line. I know a cell phone's kind of expensive. I know the child might be 9 years old or whatever, but,
compelling reason, Rob, compelling reason to buy.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because it's not what we think they need to hear that gets it done. It's what they need to hear. And what they need to hear is how what we're offering is going to benefit them. And I love this story. You know how radio and TV is just white noise, you know? You got it on, you hear the noise, but unless you're specifically tuned into it, you're not listening, right? Eight, ten years ago, I had some really bad business problems, and I just went, I crashed. And I started getting back on my feet, but I didn't have a car. So I'm standing, true story, I'm standing in the kitchen, I'm looking out the window, and I hear, now this, the TV was on in the living room. I wasn't listening to it, I had no idea what was on. This is what I heard. No credit, no down, no problem. 3 hours later, I drove home in a new car, because at the moment, it is exactly what I needed to hear. It was about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go. I would say that you were in a very unique situation there, and they really, that's the beauty of marketing. They really hit you at the right time.
Right time, right place, yeah.
Right. Me, I like to hit people, you know, who haven't crossed that fix-don't-fix line. In other words, like a cigarette smoker. You know, most cigarette smokers aren't unaware that it's not the healthiest thing to do. So what drives them over that line to finally fix it? Us badgering them with a solution? No. Usually something happens that frightens them. It's either their medical report or someone else's. My job is to get that pack of cigarettes out of your hand before we show a spot on the lung, before you get that news from a friend. And that's what I mean in terms of let's widen that net, Michael, for more people who we know have to make a change but just haven't hit rock bottom yet.
True. And it's too bad that that's what it has to happen, because you go back to a lot of the smokers. I smoked. I think I stopped in like 91. But I saw commercials, black lungs, people dying all over the place. That was not the whatever it was that caused me to quit. Okay. But the point of contention is you got to find that one trigger mechanism that they're going to say, yes, that's it. That's what I need. Hey, Rob, I could talk to you about this all night, but we're just about out of time. Let me ask you this. Website, we can find you in the books and all that you're doing, because I think you're spot on.
Thank you, sir. My website is jolles.com, and if you go there, there's actually a nice little video of the four biggest mistakes of influence that you can make, and that's all free, so you can sign up for that. And the books are everywhere. They're on the new release tables at Barnes & Noble, obviously online, Amazon, and things like that. So Monday was our launch day. It's also out in an e-book and an enhanced e-book. Michael, you are familiar with enhanced e-books?
No.
It's 10 seconds on that, but I'm really excited about it. It's actually 26 minutes of video inserted into that e-book. And I don't think it fits some topics, but for mine, where you and I are actually having a conversation about a conversation, you get to actually see simulations and role plays of these conversations. I think it's really worthwhile.
I love every second of it. Hey, Rob, thank you so much for joining us.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks, Michael.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Laughter will